Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, America. I'm Chad Pagano, former Army sniper, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and an avid lifelong hunter. And you're about to experience the wild game domain from the hunt to the hearth, airing live on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. All right, so let me set the scene for you. I'm prone. I'm on my belly. It's hot. It's about 98 degrees, something like that. Felt like 120 degrees. I've been out in this field with thick, overgrown brush, briars, red ants, red fire ants crawling up my sleeve, and I'm dragging my rifle behind me, and I'm down in this gully working through the field. I'm probably traveling at a speed of approximately, 1 yard every 4 or 5 minutes. So I'm crawling along. My head's turned sideways against the dirt, the earth, so twigs are dragging under my cheek, and I'm hunting, and I'm moving slowly. I don't want to be detected. I had stalked out my prey from a overview position up on a ridge about 400 yards from where I am now. So I was in this thick cover in the woods. The only chance at the shot for this to take down this prey was to get out into this open field. Obviously, by moving into a field, I was exposing myself, so I had to go prone, crawling. So that's what I've been doing for the last 2 hours or so, crawling 400 yards on my belly. I finally got within about, 175 yards or so of the target, and I kind of creeped up to my knees, kind of lifted myself up onto my knees a little bit, trying to hide myself in the brush still. Slowly pulled my rifle up, got the optics up to my eye, and I was trying to identify my target. Sweat just pouring down my face. I haven't had a drink in about 2 or 3 hours. I'm sweating. The adrenaline's starting to pump now because I'm finally on top of my prey and I'm about to take the shot. And I put the optics on the target, my crosshairs right on the target. Pull the trigger, remembering all my techniques for hunting, for shooting, and I squeeze back on the trigger, nice and easy, bang! I shoot the blank out, and I wait to see if my prey reacts to it. My prey is a sniper instructor at the United States Army Sniper School down in Fort Benning, Georgia, and he's sitting on top of a hilltop with very powerful optics, binoculars, spotting scopes, and there's three of them, and they're just scanning this field for about 8 or 10 snipers out in this field. So I had just taken the shot, and now they're kind of scanning, looking for me, and I could tell right away they're way off. They're scanning left and right, and they can't find me, and that's a good thing, because now all I have to do to pass this stalk at sniper school, one of the small steps you have to pass at sniper school to become a sniper, is identify a number held up on an index card. So they get about 5 minutes to scan the field, can't find me, try to identify me. They hold up a card. It's the number 4. I identify it through my optics. Now I can stand up. The whole party's over. I passed my stalk. This is one of the training elements of sniper school, the stalk, staying hidden in a tactical situation. I was an Army sniper. So you might be asking yourself already, how does this tie in with hunting? Well, you know, all the skills learned in sniper school are the skills I use when stalking prey. I don't care if you, you know, I hate to put it this way, in a military situation, stalking humans, or if you're stalking a deer. All the principles remain the same, and that's what I want to talk about today. I want to make you guys better hunters, or if you're not a hunter, I want to talk to you about becoming a hunter and understanding the discipline and the almost the all the preparation that goes into, you know, going out on a 10-hour hunt on a Wednesday. So stand up, pass the stalk, go back, and reevaluate myself. How'd I do? What did I do? Well, first thing I did, I used terrain features to hide myself. I found the ravine from that ridgetop. As I was scanning, I noticed there was a slight drop in the field, and there was a intermittent stream that had run through this field. Obviously, we were in August in Georgia. That stream was dried up, so it was this dried bed, and it had overgrown with vegetation. So this was perfect. It put me about a foot underground, you know, ground underground level, and it really concealed. So I was basically crawling under the vegetation. And this was important. You know, they couldn't pick me out as long as I wasn't moving too fast, had my ease of movement, as they call it. We were good to go. How would this play into a real world? Well, real quick story, and then we'll start going point by point here and really analyzing this. But I was on a hunt late season in Orange County, muzzleloading season. And the way I remember it, it was one of my first years muzzleloading. I was trying to extend the season. It was late December, snow on the ground, brutally cold. And I was hunting from a blind. I figured that would be easier. There was some snow expected that day. So I was in a ground blind, basically this little camouflage tent. I had thrown branches all over it, camouflaged it in. I had set it up earlier in the season, anticipating the muzzleloader hunt, and I thought it'd be a good spot late season based on terrain features and where I thought the deer would be once the snow hit, food source, you know, and cover for the deer. I sat there all morning shivering, didn't see anything. I got into my blind at 4:30 in the morning. By 11 o'clock, 11:30, I was shivering, couldn't stay still anymore. And I decided, you know what, I'm going to get out on a search and stalk or a still hunt, as we call it. You get up and you're actually walking through the woods. So I started walking down this logging path, and I had a tree stand set up in a different part of the property. And I said, you know what, I'll make my way to that tree stand. It'll warm me up. Once I get there, if I feel like it, I could climb that tree, sit in that tree stand for a while. So as I going down this logging road, I get to this one clearing. And at the end of the clearing, kind of opposite of the story I just told you, there was a rise. The terrain just kind of goes up. I wouldn't call it a ridgeline or anything. Maybe a slight elevation, 10 feet up, you know, and then it leveled off again into thick woods. And the tree stand was kind of on the edge of this field, maybe 20 meters, 20 yards or so into the woods. So as I'm walking up through this field and I'm stepping lightly and I'm trying to be quiet, I notice movement. You know, elevated movement. I'm probably, you know, eye level with it based on the distance, how far back I am in the field. And I see unnatural movement. Just, it was windy and there was snow coming down, but something caught my eye to the left. And I guess my military training kicked in. I immediately kneeled down in this grass. And so I was trying to elevate my head a little bit. And I noticed deer just kind of prancing back and forth on this ridgeline. And I thought, great, I'm stuck out here in the middle of the field. And then it all came to me. Sniper training. How am I going to get this shot? I went prone in the snow, put my gloves back on, and I started low crawling through this field. Now, my head's down. I know these deers are right inside the wood line. I start crawling. I'm crawling. Every once in a while, I'd stop. It took me probably an hour or so to cover, you know, the maybe 50 yards to this tree line. I felt where the grass stopped, and now I'm on different terrain. I feel rocks, and I know I look, and I'm starting to go up. And I'm waiting to hear anything, can't hear anything. And I'm wondering if I already blew the hunt. Did the deer see me, smell me, sense me in some way, and took off? So I just kept low, and I said, you know what, I'm going to get up to a firing position. So now I'm going up this ridgeline a little bit, and I get to where I feel like, you know, okay, maybe two more pulls of my body and I'll be level with the ground. So I just poke my head up, and within probably 8 to 10 yards, there was a deer bedded right there, a doe, just bedded down. I couldn't believe it. As close as I am to my producer right now, that's where the deer was. And she sensed something. I could tell she was a little jumpy. She must have heard a branch break or some noise I had made. And so she stood up. And so now I'm just slowly moving. And she's looking right past me. She is looking over me into the field. Slowly raise my muzzleloader. And just as I'm about to take the shot, I'm on her at 8 yards. This is going to be a great shot. I'm going to have a deer to take home. She takes off running. And then I notice about 12 to 15 deer bedded down behind her. She took off running, spooked the rest of them. They stood up, and this beautiful 12-point buck stood up at 20 yards on the edge of this bed they were all laying in and was looking back in a direction, couldn't put it all together. I immediately got the scope, my optics right on that deer, took the shot. Great hit. Deer went about 5 yards, fell down. I had my deer. So my sniper skills obviously help me here. Now, what are those skills, though? You know, really, obviously, you know, you need to be stealthy, as we would say. And but I think a lot of guys or a lot of people out in the woods, hunters, take that for granted. Truthfully, I don't care if you're out there taking pictures. You want to follow this advice I'm about to give you, right? If you're a photographer, you're wildlife photographer, you want to go to the local park, you want to go to Central Park and walk around, take pictures of birds. Why don't you follow this advice? Basically, in sniper school, you know, the number one mission of the sniper, everyone thinks it's, you know, we've all seen Tom Berenger and the sniper, the movie, all that. It's very romantic, right? We're going out, we're hunting humans, we're going to get people. Listen, I was an infantry lineman sniper. I was part of what we call a scout platoon. We would go out in front of the main body, you know, our main military unit, my company or my battalion, whatever it may be. And we would scout out the battlefield. So the number one mission wasn't shooting people. Our number one mission as snipers was battlefield observation. To be good at that, you know, to be really good at it, to get in undetected, we had to make sure we were taking certain what we called human indicators or presence indicators into consideration, in a very militaristic term, right? But basically, there's only a few things you have to worry about. If you do these things in a natural environment, okay, you'll blend right in. And some of it, well, if you don't do some of these things, I should say, we're worried about, first of all, unnatural movements. You know, think about it. You're trying to get someone to, you're trying to hail a cab in Brooklyn or in Midtown, right? And what do? Do you stand there with your hand straight up and not move? No. What do? We start waving. We start moving, flailing our arms. That's an unnatural movement. People are going to notice that. If you're just standing there, you're going to blend into the rest of the crowd walking down 7th Avenue. So we want to avoid unnatural movements. So we're going to talk about each one of these things. Unnatural sounds. You don't want to. You're in the woods. You're hunting. You don't want to have metal banging against metal. You don't want to be breaking or branches and stepping on the leaves. So you want to control your sounds. I'm going to tell you how to do that. I'm just going to say this next one: smells, odor, aroma. You got to be careful of your own, and you got to be aware of the aromas out there. So I'm going to tell you a little story about that in a little bit. And poor camouflage, you know, don't go out there in improper camouflage. I see a lot of guys doing it. I get it. There's a cost restriction here. But you really got to invest in good camouflage. You know, if you're a hunter, you know what I'm talking about. Maybe even, you know, I see some of the kids running around Brooklyn wearing some of the hunter camouflage. Maybe it's a fashion statement. But these companies make all sorts of camouflage. You know, the Realtree Outfitters versus Mossy Oak versus all these different outfits. And they're all very specific to terrain. So you got to consider your terrain, where you're hunting. If you're hunting out in the Midwest, in cornfields or in wheat fields, you gotta get an appropriate camouflage. You're in deep woods in the Northeast, you're going to want to wear an appropriate camouflage. I have camouflage for everything from snow to the open plains for when I'm hunting, and I make sure I identify the proper camouflage. Nothing silhouettes you more or has you stand out than improper camouflage. If you're wearing the improper camouflage, guess what? Those deer, those animals are going to see you. So, you know, the shooting skills, being an accurate marksman and all those things, you know, that's what we hear about snipers. And that's all very important. But guess what? If you can't even get in position without being detected, forget that. At sniper school, we called it getting busted. If you got busted, what's the point? You're dead. Or you failed sniper school. So you could sit there and shoot for hours and hours and hours. And I could take a, I could take a 1,000-yard shot, 12,000-yard shot. Who cares? If you can't get into the position undetected, you're going to end up being busted, and that could be, you know, in a military setting by a human, obviously, but in the hunting world, you're getting busted by the deer, the coyote, the bear, the pheasant, the bird, whatever you're hunting, the turkey, whatever you're hunting. So after this short break, we'll come back and we'll discuss each one of these very specifically, and we'll go through each step. So let's take that short break, and we'll be right back with the Wild Game Domain on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
You're listening to America by Four Lincolns on Heritage Radio Network.
Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
All right, now we're back. Sorry about that, Jack. I'm your host, Chad Pagano, and you're listening to the Wild Game Domain on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Still getting this whole radio broadcaster thing down, you know, so I'm trying my best here. But I heard the pros doing that too. You know, they talk over the commercial a little bit. That happens to the best of them, so I'm going to give myself a break today. So we're talking about these, what do we want to call them, categories, or let's call them categories that will make you a successful hunter or help you become a successful hunter, and they are unnatural, with things you want to avoid, unnatural movements, unnatural sounds, unnatural smells, and of course, poor camouflage. Let's say, how are we going to put this? Learning to mitigate the effects of these categories will help your pursuit of your prey, whether moving, on the move, going to your tree stand, in a stalk situation where you're actually on the move, you're in the Midwest and a lot of open terrain and you have to move to your target. Chances of that target coming to you are slim to none, really. Or if you're in your tree stand, you're hunting in the Northeast and you have a, you know, a 5-minute walk to your tree stand, and then you're going to sit in a tree stand all day. You have to think of these categories the whole time. You know, the key word I'm going to use for you guys out there, and again, if you're out for, you know, photographing wild game, use these techniques. Here's the term though. You ready? Write this down. Methodical. You need to be methodical. You need to think of every step you're about to take and think of the consequences of that step or that movement. What's going to happen when I do this? Is it going to look natural? Am I going to make a sound? Is something going to happen? Am I going to fall down? We want to blend into this natural terrain as much as possible. So let's look at each one of these things. You know, unnatural movements. When you're in the woods, if you spent any time in the woods or any natural environment, sit down and just really try to take it all in. I don't care if it's the calmest day, the sun's out, the birds are chirping. There's a movement to that environment. There's the leaves rustling. In the spring, you could see the grass blowing. You may hear, you know, the call of some birds out in the distance. You may hear, you know, the highway, the cars coming by. Try to pick up the rhythm of what's going on. I've used the sound of highways to mask my movement. I've waited till I know the traffic's going to pick up to move, you know, at about 8:30 when everyone's going to work. There's going to be a lot of cars buzzing by this one area of the highway. these cars are going past. That's when I'll start moving a little quicker to get into my position. So you got to use all these sounds, and you got to try to pick up on this movement, and you got to try to mimic it in your movements. If the wind's blowing hard, you can move a little more fluidly, a little faster, right? If the leaves are rustling. I love hunting when there's I wouldn't call it a heavy wind, but when there's a wind, when there's a sustained wind, it masks a lot of my movements out in the woods. And I use that to my advantage. The deer have been out in this windy environment, and they're getting used to these weird things. All of a sudden, a branch will fall out of a tree, or all of a sudden, a big pile of leaves will start blowing across the field. And that's when I know I can move a little more freely within that environment. The thing is, you got to control your speed and any sudden movements, especially going to your tree stand. This is the biggest overlook. People, hunters, don't think they're hunting until they get in a tree stand. Well, first of all, I apply my military tactics. I'm about to go on a mission. I got to get all my gear on, right? And the first thing I want to do is make sure I'm sound checking everything. Make sure you're taping down your calls. You know, I might have my my grunt tube on my chest around my neck, right? I'm going to tape that down or make sure it's stuck in my shirt, stuff it inside my shirt so it's not banging around. What I'll physically do is get out of my car, slowly close the door, just kind of lean on it. I don't want to slam the car door when I'm in my parking spot. Go to my trunk, get my gear out, get all geared up, and I'll actually do a jump test like we did in the military. I'll jump up and down a little bit, make sure I'm not hearing any clanking, any metal hitting. I'll make sure I use a huge amount of duct tape. I did in the military. I do when I'm hunting. I'm taping down swivels on my sling for my rifle. I'm taping down the clasps on my vest I'm wearing. So you got to sound check. And you could do that the night before, the week before. Now I have my system. I know what I need to tape down and what I need to soundproof, you know, as I'm going into the woods. So now I know I'm soundproof, no sudden movements, and I'm working my way to my tree stand. You know, most game that we pursue when we're hunting, most of them, their first line of defense is their eyes. You know, we got all this high-speed optics. We got spotting scopes, binoculars, all these things. Guess what? Their eyes, any prey, I don't care what it is, coyote, whatever you're hunting, bear, deer, whatever, their eyes are way better than any optics we have. They're going to sense that movement. They're going to see you. They're going to see something unnatural happen. They don't even have to identify it. If they know it's unnatural, they don't like the look of it, they cannot figure it out, they're on their way out of that area. That's how they survive. The deer, they're worried about coyotes, other prey animals. So if they sense something or see something, even out of the corner of their eye, they're going to be on the run. So we got to be real methodical in our approach to this. This is how they've survived for all these years. They identify a problem, or they identify something out of the ordinary, and then they move on. They move from that area. They're real cautious, and they're going to play it safe. This also helps them, obviously, in finding food. You know, if they're a predator, you know, it's the opposite. So the deer's on the lookout for the predators. The predators are on the lookout for prey. So you're hunting coyote. Any kind of weird movement, right, outside of what a deer would do or whatever their prey may be, a rabbit, you know, they see a big movement out in the field. They're not going to stick around to see what that is. That's something that's not there on their menu for the day. They're going to turn around and get out of that area. There's no point in confronting another creature in the woods that's bigger than them. It makes no sense. So, you know, the ease of movement, and then silencing everything. And that includes, you know, walking in the woods. I've done it. I'm a maniac. People call me crazy because, I'll get into the whole scent control thing in a second when I'm deer hunting. But I'll go as far as raking a path in the early season to my tree stand. I'll go in with a rake. I'll rake a path so I'm not stepping on any twigs. And it holds up for a little while until the end of fall, beginning of winter, when, you know, a lot of trees, branches start breaking, a lot of leaves come down. So it helps me in the early season. But as I'm walking, you know, naturally we walk heel to toe, right? We take these steps, big, long steps, heel to toe. The problem with that is we're focusing all the weight of our body on the heel as we step down. So, I'm stepping in the woods. My heel comes in contact with a twig. I'm definitely going to break that twig. So you got to walk flat-footed when you're in the woods. You got to kind of lift your foot,
put it straight down, almost like you're you know, trying to avoid landmines. You're feeling with your foot any kind of resistance as you put it down. So I'll walk flat-footed. People make fun of me. I'm walking flat-footed. Each step is methodical, very slowly, and I'll press it down. I'll feel for any resistance of a twig. If I feel anything, I'll lift that foot and put it forward or put it back a little more. So I'm kind of shuffling along at a very slow pace as I'm heading to my tree stand. So now I finally made it to my tree stand. The sound control's good, methodical, finally made it. I got to get up in the tree as quietly as possible. And that's where a lot of hunters, you know, lose it. They, you know, they tie their rifle off. We have a hoist line or, you know, a pull line to bring all our gear up, and we'll climb our tree. Guys, you know, bang buckles and other things into the metal tree stand. Any unnatural noise like that, you can forget it. Game's over. Deer know they shouldn't hear metal on metal contact out in the middle of the woods. They hear that. At a minimum, they're alerted now to that area, and they're going to be very skeptical of that area. They're not going to come, you know, prancing through, you know, without a care in the world. So you got to be careful getting in. But once you're in, I've seen hunters feel like, okay, I'm 20 feet up in the air now. No chance of them ever spotting me. And they're moving about, and they're getting their coffee cups out, and they're eating their donut. It's the wrong answer. These deer, their vision is beautiful, wonderful. They could see everything, any kind of weird movement. So I'll sit still. I'll try to keep my rifle or my bow in as close to a shooting position as possible. You know, of course, without exhausting yourself. You don't want to have it up, you know, in your arm ready to shoot. But, you know, I try to keep it across my body. My bow, I try to keep it in my left hand ready to go. And what you want to do is scan with your eyes. You don't even want to move your head as much as possible. You want to go scan left and right. So as I'm scanning left, I scan as far as I can with my eyes. Then my head will follow. It's nice and slow. I've already pre-scanned that area with my eyes. Now my head can follow, and that could help me. Now I could scan a little further left, back and forth, methodically, taking everything in. And you're looking, you know, you're looking for the same things you're trying to avoid, that unnatural movement, something out of the ordinary, something different. You know, some of the other things I think I've talked about this in earlier shows, my scent control. You know, I figured out in the military, we're spoiled by our sense of smell, especially in an urban environment here in New York City, in Brooklyn, right? I'm in a pizza place right now, Roberta. That's putting it lightly. I'm in a great restaurant, Roberta's, and the aroma of the wood, the wood-burning stove, the pizza, everything. You know, we kind of take it for granted. It becomes second nature. Well, same thing for our prey animals out in there. Neck of the woods, when they smell anything out of the ordinary, they're out of that area. That doesn't belong here. So you smokers, your guys who chew tobacco, all that stuff, they're going to sense it. I have guys, the old-timers, tell me, I smoke all the time. They get used to it. You know what? Okay, maybe I don't know the science behind that, but I try to avoid everything out of the ordinary. That means in the morning, taking my shower, scent proofing myself. I use scent free soaps. Hunters, any hunting store sells all these scent free products, scent eliminators, and I'll use antibacterial liquids on my hands. You know, soaps, things like that. I'm trying to eliminate any odor. My hunting gear is all washed in scent free soaps, scent free detergents to try to get them clean, but not leave any residual odor. So I dress out in the field, get all my scent control. And this includes, guys forget, you know, in being in hunting clubs, it's funny because the night before it's all very festive. Everyone's drinking a little bourbon, relaxing. And, you know, especially us Italians, everything's garlic and we got a lot of strong. I refuse to eat that stuff couple of nights before the hunt. I start eating, you know, a little bit like a hippie a couple of days before. I'm eating granolas, I'm eating grains, I'm eating things naturally found out in the woods. But I figured this all out in the military. When you get out in the woods and spend any time out there in a natural environment, your senses change. You start smelling things. So, you know, we have to be real careful of that. You know, when I was in the military, I started realizing I could almost smell the enemy. I could smell when humans have been in an area. It sounds ridiculous, but if you get out in nature, you really can start building these senses. I've smelt deer from a distance, especially during the rut. Estrus, I've smelt does urinating, you know, quite a distance away from me. I could pick up the aroma depending on the wind, and it becomes very interesting. So, you know, not to get all spiritual on you guys today, but you got to become one with your surroundings out there. You have to really, really immerse yourself in it. So, you know, scent control is huge, and open your nose to it as you're out in the woods, and try to get out in the woods as much as possible. You know, these guys who don't go in the woods all year and then hunt in October, you're out of tune. You gotta be scouting and checking the terrain all year around. You should be doing that anyhow if you're a deer hunter. The main thing is, you know, when you're on these hunts, is to go slow and steady. And remember, each step is the one that can make or break you. There's nothing more frustrating for hunters than putting in all the time and effort it takes. You drive there, the expense of it, the license, all the gear. You know, the main goal is to take down an animal, right? To come home and consume this animal. To blow it because you didn't sound check your tree stand, or the swivel on your sling for your rifle is clanking around as you're walking to your tree stand. And now, you know, I have guys telling me, I haven't seen a deer in weeks. Well, you know, you got to check yourself before you get out there and make sure you're doing all this. All of this preparation and all of this methodical movement and scent control is going to make you a way better hunter at the end of the day. And that's what it's really all about. The more prey we could bring home, the more prey we get to consume, the more wild game we bring into our life. That's about all the time we have. I think I summed it up pretty well for you guys. I would like to thank Jack again for producing and engineering today's show. He did a great job as usual. You could always find us archived at the radio station, all my shows. I want you to listen. Look up the Wild Game Domain, From the Hunt to the Hearth. We'll be back next Tuesday. Thank you, America.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.